Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio. Yo, turn to that station.
Stop pity the fool.
Living in the 80s.
My name's Casey Kasem, and I'm all set to count down the most popular songs in the USA.
I want my MTV!
Does Theo Huxtable live here?
Just say no.
Hello.
Face it, you're a neo-maxi-zoom dweeby.
Woo!
It says 100% guaranteed, you moron.
Hey, where's the beat?
I'm a very lucky woman.
So am I.
Live from Members Only Studio, welcome to Living in the 80s, a podcast where we talk about anything and everything having to do with the 1980s.
The best that we remember.
This is going to be a good day. I have got a guy I met on Facebook that we kind of seem to have parallel paths. And we're going to talk about more 80s radio. Thank you very much. A lot of positive input from last week's interview with Mark Dancer. Today, we've got Chris Adams. And it's not the wrestler, gentleman Chris Adams. This is the radio personality, Chris Adams. Chris, thanks for joining me today. How are you?
Thank you, Rob. Doing great here in a 92-degree day. Looking forward to Thursdays of 98s and stuff like that. So
makes you kind of long for the fall.
Kind of, but I'm a summer guy. I'm from the South, so...
So where are you from originally?
All right. So I was born in Jersey, and I get to say Jersey because I was born in New Jersey. So I get the right to say that. However, by the time I got to starting grammar school and in high school, we were down in Atlanta. So that's what I remember the most is growing up in the South and growing up in Atlanta, listening to Z93 radio.
WZGC Atlanta plays the hits.
Mason, Z93.
Steve McCoy was one of the big DJs down there. So spent most of my years in Atlanta and then went off to college in North Carolina and Nashville. So that's pretty much, I've got a little bit of South. I've got some North. I've got the whole mix there.
And now you're in Cincinnati?
Just right there in the Midwest. That's right. My wife is from here. We met in college, and I usually say she won and we ended up coming back here. She won, meaning that when we talked about where to end up, she won. I don't mean like I was a big prize that she won. I in no way. If anything, I won the prize. Come on.
Don't sell yourself short, brother. All right. So we're going to start off very similar to like we did last week. You are a couple years younger than me. So you were a teenager throughout the 80s, got to live the greatest decade of music.
Amen.
So I'm going to start off with you since you are in the radio business. And this week we just celebrated National Radio Day. So appropriate interview here. So Chris, when did you realize you wanted to get into radio?
That is a great question. When do we ever realize we want to get, we all know that we want to get in radio. And then once we're in, we ask ourselves, what am I doing here? But when I was, like I said, in the 80s, as I'm in, Atlanta, North Atlanta area, an area called Roswell, Alpharetta, which back then was just a small little town, had a Dairy Queen, a high school, and a drugstore. And now anyone who's familiar with Alpharetta knows that it's way more than that. But what I would do on the weekends, I'd be listening to the radio in this person named Casey Kasem, an American Top 40. And I just thought it was really cool. I'd listen to a countdown, and the next week would come, and I'd listen again. And go, oh, yeah, that was the song that was at number blah, 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 whatever last week. And this song was this. And I distinctly remember Olivia Newton-John, Physical, being number one. And then the next week, and the next week, and the next week. And it just kept on being number one. I thought that was really cool that a song was going to be number one. Ended up being, the biggest song of the decade. And I would write that down. And then I started write down the top three. And the next thing you know, every week I'm keeping up with the top 10. And I'm typing them up on the typewriter. And back then, of course, we didn't have word processors. Well, later in the decade, I'd start using the word processors, the Commodore 64 and all that. But I'd type them up and I'd have the top 10. And next thing I realize is I'm memorizing these stats. And while my friends are collecting baseball cards or stamps or coins and stuff, my hobby was the charts. and just memorizing, you know, what songs went to what positions or what album they were from and how long were they on the charts and stuff like that. And at that point, I started realizing, man, this is something I could see myself doing somehow. I didn't really know how, but somehow I'd end up using this as part of my future, my career, whatever that would be at the time. I had no idea. Sure enough, went off to college. I majored in music, actually, not music industry, but music performance, jazz, commercial studies, stuff like that. And then I went on to music education. And I think it was like the week that I graduated from grad school with my music education degree, I got a call from a local station that I had sent a cassette to, because back in the day, you know, we used cassettes. We didn't have MP3 files. And Billy Shears was the program director at a local station there in Nashville. And he says, hey, yeah, I've got a position. It's overnights, but, you know, it's a great entry position. Back then, overnights, you had to have somebody actually physically in the studio. It's not like nowadays where everything's programmed and virtually nobody's in the studio anymore. But back then they did. So I talked to the wife about it. It wasn't the best of pay. It was an overnight job. And that's when I realized, okay, so now here I am in radio. That was a soft rock AC station playing Phil Collins, Michael Jackson. Of course, then it was the 90s. So also Mariah Carey, Boyz II Men, that kind of stuff. John Cicada. A lot of John Cicada for the people who remember the 90s.
A lot of Michael Bolton, Celine Dion.
Oh, yes, yes.
That's to make you want to throw up somewhere, right?
Well, you know, we all have our guilty pleasures. So
We do. And not all of that stuff was bad, but some of it I hear now and I'm like, oh, wow. Wow. So you answered my next question. What was your first radio job? How long were you there and what was your next stop?
So I was there for 3-4 years before I finally took up my music education, used my music education degree and went into teaching, and was out of radio for a good decade, I guess, or so. But I always still had that nag for it. I mean, I just had to have it. I wanted to get back into it. I'd listen to the radio and I'd think, hey, I miss that. I would love to do that. And years later then, I ended up, like I said, here in Cincinnati, and they were giving away tickets to John Waite was going to be in town without the Babies, without what was the group he was with? I know people are screaming right now. Bad English. Yeah, it was just, but it was just John Waite doing his stuff, of course. And they're giving away tickets. So I'm out in the yard working. So I ran in, got the phone, called real quick. Hey, you're calling or whatever, you know, and it's, oh, okay, cool. And then the guy on the other line, he was a famous DJ here in Cincinnati, Ron Schumacher. Anyone who's listening in Cincinnati knows Rock and Ron. And I said, hey, by any chance you guys are still looking for, maybe a little part-time, a little side radio stuff. He said, oh, we're always looking for something, you know, always could use another, you know, another voice kind of thing. So I got back into radio at a local, what we call greatest hits station here in Cincinnati, 103.5 WGRR. They played what I would call, the best of the 70s and 80s.
Cincinnati's greatest hits of all time. Take it easy. And now more great 80s hits. Here she come now, say, morning, morning. 103.5 WGRR.
A lot of 70s, a lot of 80s stuff. If you listen to it now, they've also added 90s to it. So that was a real comfortable place to get back into radio because it was a lot of stuff that I knew from when I was growing up in the 70s, but a lot of the stuff that I watched go up and down the charts in the 80s. So right. I did that for a while. They also owned a station a couple doors down, a warm 98, and it was a soft rock station. And they played, you know, current stuff, but also was playing a lot of 80s. So I would also do some weekends for them as well.
One of the things I always loved about radio back in those days were the promotions. Some of them were sort of cool. I think I probably won a few cassettes and things. I know on QFM 96, they used to have a thing on there called Two for Tuesday.
Rockin' and rolling for 10 years. WLVQ FM 96, Columbus.
It was a classic rock station where they would play two songs from an artist back to back every Tuesday. If they only played one, then if you're the right caller, you win $96. I won $96 one time. They played only one rich song. Man. That's right. They only played one song by Los Lobos. I was able to cash in.
Well, I mean, you know, what other songs they're going to be?
Yeah.
Okay, granted, the chart geeks out there know that there's another Los Lobos song out there. Yeah, granted. But
yes.
I mean, they're not going to play that on the radio. They're going to play the one we all know about.
La Bamba. Yes, they do.
Right. I didn't know if we could, you know, if we could say the title or not. There you go.
Oh, we could say it. We're going to play clips. We're going to do everything here today.
Awesome.
So we're going to be in good shape. Thinking of those promos, are there any cool promos that you were involved in that you remember from back in those, in your earlier days of radio?
So I would have to clap right here and say, no, there's really nothing that I think we can talk about as far as promos that might be boring to the listener. Cause I can't think of anything.
You know, and that's okay.
Cause mostly, I mean, like I said, it's going to be all 90s and stuff. And
that's cool.
And stuff like that.
Even the 90s, anything there that stuck out? Like,
I mean, and then you've got all your bands that are coming back on, they're back on tour. You've got your Journey, you've got your REO Speedwagon, they're all coming back through Def Leppard. And you'd hear, especially at WGRR, we'd have these special weekends. So it'd be like a class reunion weekend or something, the class of 1986, class of 1984, whatever. And we'd be playing, in addition to our regular format, be playing a lot of extra songs by these artists that are going to be back, going to be at the Riverbend, downtown Cincinnati, or they're going to be or whatever. And, they play an, we play two Journey songs, kind of like you're talking about, play two Kansas songs or two whatever songs, call in at the right one and get you free pair of tickets and stuff like that. And that's always exciting to hear people when they call in, how excited they get. I never win anything. I mean, every time somebody would call, the response was always, I've never won anything in my life. To which I'm kind of speechless. I'm like, I'm sorry that this is it, but yeah, it's just a pair of tickets. But to them, that's exciting. They love that. I mean, a free pair of tickets to go see the band that they've probably never seen before. Maybe they've got some t-shirts and stuff and they'll wear them if they're worn out, but they'll go to those concerts and they love it. But usually it's just like that. It's you listen for a certain song, you listen for a certain couple of songs, call in, you end up at one of those concerts.
Speaking of concerts, what is your favorite 80s era concert that you went to?
I'm going to have to say without any hesitation, Daryl Hall and John Oates. It was my first rock concert ever. Okay, because I have to clarify, my first rock concert, meaning the first concert that I chose to go to without the parents. And it was Daryl Hall, John Oates, Live Through 85, Civic Center, 1980, blah, 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 blah. Live Through 85 is the Big Bam Boom tour. So I'm going to say 84, 85. I forgot which year it was. As a matter of fact, I was going through some of my KeepSafe stuff the other day and I came across the ticket. I held on to that ticket. Oh, Daryl Hall. And I think just because it was my first concert, my first rock concert, if you want to call that rock. I mean, back then I did. And I think it's because it was my first concert. I thought it was just amazing. Loved it. We were so far away from the stage, but I didn't care. Could not care a bit.
I have seen them a couple times in concert, once way back in the day, and then another one probably 4 or 5 years ago. They both times they just put on an outstanding show. They're just so fun, and you know every single song. So
exactly, they had so much to choose from. I mean, I'm sure that everyone's going home, well, I wish they had played such and such a song, but there's no way they could have played them all, and not get us home before the next day. So.
Which would have been okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, except when you're again, I'm in high school. So, I probably had a curfew and I had to be home by a certain time. So as much as I wanted another encore, I'm probably also looking at my watch going, oh, crud, I got to get home here.
In your opinion, since you were like a radio listener in the 80s, like our audience were, when you think about from before MTV aired to after, do you notice a difference in how radio was programmed?
The way it was programmed, let me back up and say, I'd tell you the biggest difference I found from MTV versus pre-MTV, or even, if we want to even say the first years of MTV, when people were still, not everybody had cable, when it first came on the air on 8/1/81. Was it August 1st, 81, yes. Right? That's how I memorize it. I just remember 81/81. I remember distinctly as people started talking or asking, well, could you play this song or that song? And it'd be like, well, now tell me about the song again. And whereas maybe before they'd say, well, you know, the chorus had the line that went like this, or the verse says this at the very beginning. They start saying, well, you know, it starts out with the, that atomic bomb blowing up, and then the guy has that funny face, and he's wearing that weird thing, and everything's coming out of his brain and everything. And there, I realize, oh, now we're describing music based on the music video,
yeah,
and not the content of the song. It's all based on, you know, it was a cool video, so I want to hear the song. It was, you know, it's all based on what we saw, and not what we were hearing. And I know a lot of people, you know, especially musicians are much into their craft. And boy, I know there's a lot of bands out there that hated music videos, but it sold. Obviously it sold a lot of music. Right. So as people start asking, you know, you play this song, can you play that song? You try to describe it, or they start describing the video and not the song itself.
Driving DJs nuts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because you got to remember now the DJs at that time, I'm not a DJ at that point, right? But the DJs were older. They weren't necessarily into the MTV thing. I mean, you know, they might have to watch it just to stay on top of on things. But some of them weren't into videos. They were probably even saying, "I don't want to watch videos or anything. It's you know, it's killing our career or something. You know, the video killed the radio star type of mentality." So
what they're kind of saying, like, is those DJs were saying, "I don't want my MTV."
I see what you did there.
Our next question here. What is the difference? You know, you were started radio in the early 90s. So I would say 80s, 90s, mid 90s, you know, late 90s, mm-hmm. whatever, was pretty much operated the same way as far as how the day to day went. Now, today, you work at a radio station. Here's your chance to go ahead and plug your current station and then talk about how different it is now versus then.
Radio, gosh, even the charts back in the 80s were any given week you had your basic pop music, whatever was the most popular, you know, of the pop, and then maybe you'd have I think early 80s a lot of country mixed in, mm-hmm. all right, and maybe a little R&B. Then you move in and then you go later into the 80s, and now country's gone. There's not a lot of country at all on the pop charts. I mean, if you look at a chart or listen to a pop radio station, now you're being saturated with the pop music and a lot of R&B. Late 80s, you get into the beginning of the boy bands, New Kids on the Block and New Edition, stuff like that. And that kind of permeates, and that's all over the charts. Nowadays, I'm telling you, you listen to a pop radio station, especially here in Cincinnati, there's a couple. And we're close enough to Dayton where we can catch one. And every time I'll listen to a Dayton station, I won't plug it because I don't really know it very well. But I know it enough that they will play a Taylor Swift song followed by a country song, be it, you know, what the most recent Morgan. There you go. Waylon. And then they'll play Nicki Minaj. And then they'll play and you look at the charts and it's the same thing. You look in the top 10 and you've got country, you've got R&B, you've got pop, you've got EDM, love EDM music kind of stuff. And it's just now pop music is really it's everything at the same time. Whereas back in the 80s, things seemed it was really separate. You had your times, your years of where country was, you know, crossover country was the big thing. You had a couple of years where R&B was a real big thing, mm-hmm. dance, whatnot. And like I said, now it's all just, you can listen to one particular station and hear a legitimate variety of styles. And I'm okay with that, yeah. quite honestly.
We talked about the difference of music from then to now. What about the way radio is programmed, the DJs, when they come to work during the day? What's different between then and now?
I'll tell you the biggest thing, and this may be giving away, you know, one of our insider secrets here, but there's a good chance that the person you're listening to at your radio station right there and then at that, whatever given time that is not physically in that station at the time. And that's a pre-recorded, what we call voice tracking in the industry, where you're going to, they're whether it's an hour before or whether it's days before and they recorded the show, it's put into the computer. Then all of a sudden, you know, your shift rolls around and you're at home. And most radio people were good at turning on our show every now and then to get, listen, you know, how's it sounding? Make sure it sounds good. Whereas back when we were live, you could do that on time. You know, you could do that, you know, of course, in the moment. But your show is probably, there's a good chance that it's pre-recorded. Now, if it's an afternoon drive, if it's a morning drive time, then it's probably going to be live. But even then, that's not 100% of the time.
Gotcha.
And I'll tell you, as a DJ, I remember going in the 90s and we played Carts, which was like a big cassette tape, if you will. We had CDs that we would play. And there were some songs that were actually on reel to reels. Wow. If you know what a reel to reel is, you know what it is. If you don't, you don't. Nowadays, and let me back up. I would dream that I'd have nightmares that, oh my gosh, a song's about to come up. I'm looking on the playlist here, or I'm supposed to pull out this CD and play this song. I turn around and look for the CD and I can't find it. And I look at the clock. I got, oh my gosh, I've got 45 seconds left. I got to hurry. And I have these nightmares of not being able to, in time, have that song ready. Of course, most DJs will have their music out and ready, you know, hours before. Nowadays, it's all on the computer. Mm-hmm. And really, if anything, you're not going to miss the songs playing. If anything, you're gonna forget to turn on that mic and talk and say what you need to say. So I'm sure there's a lot of times now where people are like, oh, I've got 35 seconds. I gotta get my prep stuff, because if I don't, the music's it's gonna roll on. It's gonna keep going.
Talk to us about the station you're at now and kind of what you were prefacing with me before we started recording.
So the station I'm at now is called Star 93.3. And we are, let's say, if I'm out and about, which is my main job, is to take the station outside the four walls and go to events and go to different concerts, go to different festivals and present the station, meet our listeners and everything. When people say, oh, well, tell me about your station. You know, what do you play? I will say we are a soft rock, family friendly, encouraging and uplifting station, you know, safe for the family. Give it a listen anytime. You know, give them some information about the station. Tell them where we are on the web, where we are on the radio dial, that kind of stuff. If they pry a little more, I'll say, and then, yeah, we are a contemporary Christian station. So sometimes people, you know, depending upon your audience, you know, they don't know what contemporary Christian is, or maybe they do. And they have I really don't think I want to listen to that. I don't want to be pegged into a religious station. So I like to describe it as soft rock, positive, encouraging soft rock, safe for the whole family type of thing.
All right, we're going to take a brief break and we're going to talk about, you have got one of the coolest Facebook pages ever. Hang tight and we are going to talk all about what he's up to today.
Thank you for listening to Living in the 80s. We want to take this opportunity to thank all of those that helped make this possible. First and foremost, we want to thank Spotify for Podcasters for providing this platform, as well as Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, and about a dozen others. We also want to give a special thank you to Star1079.com and Roundtown Radio, where you can hear this podcast weekly. Also, be sure to check us out in our Facebook page, Living in the 80s. Most of all, we want to thank you for listening.
Shall we play a game?
Hi, I'm Joel McLaughlin, the most excellent host of Living in the Retro Arcade. If you're into video games from the 70s to current day, this is the show for you. We'll talk about technical aspects of the games as well as memories, the best that we can remember them. That's Living in the Retro Arcade, available on all popular podcast platforms.
Welcome back to Living in the 80s. I have Chris Adams here with me. And how I met Chris, I stumbled across this Facebook page that I absolutely fell in love with. Just growing up, I think you guys have heard me and Kevin at least talk on here before, how we would scour over the Billboard magazines back in the 80s, see what was on the charts, look at these songs number 41 to 100, and just kind of see if we can go find those records and so forth. And it was really good to find things that were beyond just, they call it top 40, but it's really about a top 15 to 20 songs that a radio station will play. But so Chris, talk to us about Chart Geeks and what will we find there, and talk about this labor of love that you do.
So like you said, the key words being Chart Geek. When I was, like I said, growing up in the 80s, listening to music, writing down the top 10, keeping up with it, memorizing it. I thought to myself, and I would keep this to myself. I wouldn't really tell a lot of my friends that I was doing this because I thought it was so weird. I didn't hear a lot of the other kids talking about it. They didn't care what the top 10 were. And if it was, I probably had a lot of people like, well, that's stupid pop music. You know, I want to listen to metal. I want to listen to country. I want to listen to R&B, whatever it is. So I was a little, I don't want to use the word embarrassed, but I just kept it to myself that I was so geeky about this stuff, how much I loved to keep up with the charts and how much I love to memorize chart positions and peaks and stuff like that. Fast forward to, gosh, when remember those CDs we get in the mail? AOL, America Online.
Oh,
back
yeah.
In the day.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So here I pop that in. I'm online suddenly. And next thing I realize, I'm not alone. I thought I was the only one. I honestly thought that other than Casey Kasem and maybe a few others who I'd heard of, like Dick Clark's and stuff like that, I thought I was the only one that actually gave one hoot about what the number one song was, about how many weeks it spent on the chart. I thought I was the only chart geek. I was the only geek that actually cared about the charts. So I started calling myself a chart geek. I come to realize, because I'm talking to people on America Online chat windows back in the days when we would all chat online, yeah. And it was safe for the most part.
Right.
Come to realize there are other people out there. There are a whole lot of other people out there that love to talk about the charts, that memorized the charts, that did exactly what I was doing in the 80s. I thought I was alone, and it was eye-opening. Next thing I know, I'm talking to people about you know, their chart experiences. And then Facebook comes out. And I realize, you know, there's groups for everything. I mean, there's a group for people who are left-handers, which I am, by the way. There's groups for people who like hot sauce. There's groups for everything. I thought, well, you know what? Why not start a group for people to talk about the charts? And affectionately called it Chart Geeks. And more specifically, we were going to concentrate on the 80s. And even more specifically, any song that appeared on the Hot 100 chart from January, the first week of January 1980 to the last week of December 1989. And any song that appeared on the chart, even if it was 1 week, 2 weeks, there are a couple songs that only had a couple weeks on the chart or 1 week. Any song that appeared on the chart during those dates was fair game. We could talk about it. We'd throw back trivia. And if you look at the page now, there's trivia. People throw out the geekiest of questions that I just love. And of course, the rest of us love them too. The rest of the chart geeks. You know, this song spent 5 weeks at this position before falling down to this position. And it was by an artist who had the number one album that week. What song am I talking about? You know, comment yeah. below kind of thing. Oh man, we love that kind of stuff. So that, you know, that's when I realized, okay, there's a need for this page. And we just kept it going. It's been going on. You know, I should probably look it up to see how long that particular page has been going on for.
But it's a great group. And I stumbled across it, I want to say maybe a year or two ago. And, you know, you get all these suggestions of groups to join. So I joined this one. You know, you can always leave if you don't like it. This is like one of my favorite ones to go visit. He'll do like a survey. Like, these songs peaked at number 22. What's the best one? He'll do like a final four bracket, and you know, you get a winner.
Let's talk about that for a second. That is one of my favorite parts of the page. You have to remember, all right, so if we go back to 2020, of course, the biggest thing is you know, the COVID years.
Right.
And around March, of course, it was this March Madness thing. Now, March is when COVID pretty much started really affecting everybody, staying home, schools were closing, you're working from home, that kind of thing. 2 months go by, and May suddenly is here. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I don't know if March Madness had been delayed or what was going on. All I know is that March Madness was in my head. And I'm not a big sports fan. You have to keep that in mind. Again, I'm a chart geek, so I'm always thinking charts. But I know that everybody on Facebook was talking about, you know, March Madness, and every March people talk about March Madness. It's all you see. I mean, it's all people talk about. It's all you see on TV kind of stuff and on posts and everything. And I thought to myself, wouldn't it be cool if people got just as excited about chart geek stuff as people do March Madness? So in May of 2020, I believe that's right, May, I started what we call brackets, well, you know, chart geek brackets, where we took, for the first month, we took every song that peaked at number one in the 80s, again, January 80 to December 89, and said, okay, guys, all right, vote for your whatever of these songs. There were 230 something of them, right? Vote for your favorite songs on all these. You can pick more than one if you want. And we ended up building the top 32. All right. So out of the 230 something, we went down to 32 based on everyone's votes. And then we created a bracket and said, okay, here's your top 32. Seed one is up against seed number 32. Seed two is going to be up against number the song that came in seeded 31. You know, a typical basic bracket. And sure enough, we went through all that. And then we went to the Sweet 16 and then the Elite Eight. And then we're at the Final Four. And by the end of the month, we're down to the championship round. And I wish I had all my records from back then. But all I do know is that the number one song, or the song that the Chart Geeks rated as their favorite song that peaked at number one, was When Doves Cry by Prince. And that was so exciting. And I thought that was the end of it. But then there was so much response that I thought, okay, well, listen, all right, let's go ahead and do the songs that peaked at number two. So the next month, we started out with all the songs that peaked at number two. All right, we call it the build. Everybody vote for your favorite songs on this entire list. Vote for as many as you want. And based on the number of votes, we're going to come up with a top 32. And we did the same thing. The next month, we did number three. The next month, we did number four. We've been doing that ever since. And this particular month, we are up to songs that peaked at number 39. And some people say, oh, man, yeah, I'm so sorry it's coming to an end here. You know, in a month, it's going to be top 40. I'm thinking, we're not ending.
No.
There's a Hot 100 chart. There's a 100
more to go.
Exactly. So we're going to keep this going as long as people will respond to it. And we get a lot of response on this one. So actually, right now, in real time, well, I don't know when this is being recorded, but as of right now, we are in the songs that peaked at number 39, and we are up to the final four. And the songs that are in the final four are Atomic by Blondie. Now, these are songs that peaked at number 39. Atomic by Blondie is up against Runaway by Bon Jovi. And there's also a bracket of In the Mood by Robert Plant is up against I Don't Care Anymore by Phil Collins. Those are the font. Those are the four that we're down to right now. And as of this recording, Phil Collins is beating Robert Plant. I won't say significantly, but probably it looks like he's going to win and go into the championship round because he's at 59% against 41 for In the Mood. This is surprising to me. The Atomic by Blondie is losing to Bon Jovi's Runaway, but by only 2%.
Wow.
So we'll see. It gets really, really close sometimes. And I make it a point not to vote. I don't want to skew the votes in any way. Not that people care what my thoughts are.
I would do it.
Yeah, but I only do it, to be honest, whenever there is a dead heat tie and it's not the final four. Elite Eight, I might, but when it comes to the Final Four or championship round, I won't vote. And if it's a dead heat tie, I keep it going. I'll repost it and say, okay, we need to do this, start all over again, you know, that kind of thing. So if I had to predict what's going to happen, obviously I think we're going to see Phil Collins go up against, I don't know who. I mean, is it going to be Runaway or is it going to be Atomic by Blondie? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
That's a little closer than I thought, because this morning I actually got in there and voted for Runaway, which I have always liked Blondie, but Runaway is my favorite Bon Jovi song. Yeah. And then Phil Collins and Robert Plant, I didn't see that one in there to vote for it. I must have overlooked it. But gosh, I would probably, that's a tough one because I love both of those songs, both of those artists. I would probably have to do Phil Collins on that one. Now, if it was a wimpier Phil Collins song, I probably wouldn't. But that's
what happens if it goes up against Runaway next week.
Oh gosh. I think I'd probably vote for Phil Collins on that. I think I do look at that a little bit more than I do Runaway. It's just Phil when he was raw and not doing Disney soundtracks and stuff.
Yeah.
I like that version of Phil a whole lot better. So, but I can see the case for either one of them. I'd say any of those four, I could see the case for all of them. It's a good four.
Started keeping track of the winners. And there's a Spotify list now, if anyone's on Spotify. And I think somebody went ahead and did one for Apple Music as well, where all the songs that won each bracket or each month are in a playlist. Yeah, and the Spotify one is there. If you look up Chart Geeks, you'll see it. It has and it's just called Bracket Winners or something like that. When Doves Cry, you know, was number one. The number two, the songs that peaked at number two, the winner was What Have I Done to Deserve This? I won't go through them all, but anyway, you can see what they are. All the way down to last month, where Promises in the Dark by Pat Benatar won the 38 peak, the songs that peaked at number 38. And we'll just keep this going, you know, and until we get, again, until as long as everyone has an interest in it, we'll keep it going. So you can always head over to Spotify or Apple Music and look for the Chart Geeks Brackets winners.
Yeah, and that Apple Music was me. So
there you go.
There you go. Well, there is a cool app that I've found called SongShift. So if you've got a Spotify account or an Apple account, you can take a playlist and clone it to your others. So
now that is cool. Is that a free app, or is there a little fee involved?
There is a free version that, I mean, you could do everything. I was doing massive playlists though, because I was sharing some stuff across, you know, platforms, and I end up spending like $10 or something to get a lifetime fastest speed they can give you, kind of a thing. But you can do a playlist of, you know, 40 songs in about a minute and a half. So
great.
Yeah, it's good stuff. All right, so Chris, you are the chart geek, the king of the geeks, kind of like Anthony Michael Hall was in 16 Candles. You are the king. So I'm going to ask you a few questions here.
Oh, boy.
So you have to actually pick this time. You can't squirrel your way out of it and let somebody else make the choice. This is your opinion. You got to give me answers.
Oh, here. Opinion. I can take opinions. I thought you were going to do music trivia.
Oh, no.
All right, here we go. Which, you know, I'll tell you right now, if you're ever in an 80s trivia, pop music, United States pop music from the 80s trivia. Yeah, I'd love to, you know, love to help you out. Let me know. But okay, opinions, no problem.
All right, so you give them to me as I read them off to you. If you had pick a favorite song of the 80s, 1980 through 1989, what would that song be?
And this maybe where I have to turn in my man card here, but
there is a guilty pleasure category too. So save it, or if you got two, whatever you got there.
Well, anyone who knows me knows that my favorite song is Careless Whisper by Wham. Or is it Wham featuring George Michael? Or is it George Michael? Again, that's where Chart Geeks, we could have a half hour to an hour conversation on yes. Really, what is it? You know, according to Billboard Hot 100, it's Wham featuring George Michael. Careless Whisper. Love that song.
Which has maybe one of the best sax solos ever.
Yes, it does. Yes. Most certainly.
I saw a thing. I was studying this song for, we do a song of the day on the Living in the 80s Facebook page, and we'll take different topics for the week. Every week we'll have, maybe it's like top songs in 1984, you know, top sax solos, whatever. I don't remember what this was. Maybe it was prom week or something. I don't remember what it was. But Careless Whisper, I started studying this song, and apparently George Michael had a certain sound in his mind he wanted the saxophone to be like. And they auditioned and got samples of like 100 different sax solos to do this part. Never could quite find it, but somebody, I guess, down in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, went in the studio in there, popped down the sax solo, and that's what they used. So that's the sound I'm looking for. That is just a well-crafted pop song.
And if I were to cross my two biggest things in life, Chart Geeks and my music majoring in college, you put them together, that's where Careless Whisper can be used as, and this, now we're getting really geeky here. So my music majors, listen up here. If you know how we learn our modes in music theory, if you ever want to be able to impress somebody and be able to sing the Phrygian mode, which I think is based off the third scale degree of a major scale. I know I'm really getting real geeky now, but if you ever want to be able to sing a Phrygian scale, just think about the last line of the saxophone solo of Careless Whisper.
Thank you.
Very, just go back and listen to it. Those when you hear that scale, it's a full scale. That is a Phrygian mode. Boom. There you go.
You're mind blown. I've learned today.
Geek.
You know, it's okay when we can self-identify as geeks.
That's right.
I'll take it.
It took a while, but I was able to accept it when I realized, okay, I'm not the only one.
Favorite 80s album?
You know, I'm sitting here in my home studio, my home office, and I've got 16 or 12 albums up on the wall that were just influential to me in the 80s. And my favorite, I'm looking at it right now, Daryl Hall and John Oates, Private Eyes. Love that album. I love it from track one to however many tracks. It's from beginning to end. I love that album.
Favorite 80s artist?
Huey Lewis and the News. Big time. Oh, can you get more American and more pop than Huey Lewis and the News?
Not really.
Now, you asked favorite artist, and that's my favorite band, but mm-hmm. I'd have to, and again, anyone who knows me knows that my favorite singer from the 80s, you know, solo-wise, is Richard Marx. Love him. You either love him or hate him, I guess, but I admit, man, I love it. Have every one of his albums. I was sure to buy his albums as soon as they came out. I am such a geek that I even just posted on the Geeks page, what makes you a chart geek? And I posted a picture of this Hot 100 chart that I had signed by Richard Marx back in the 80s.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, I went up to him and I remember being such a geek and like saying, in the chart, this particular chart is when Satisfied was number one, Satisfied from his Repeat Offender album. And Right Here Waiting was just like moving up the charts. And here's me walking up to him at the record store where he was signing. You know, everyone's got CDs and records and stuff that they're signing. And I'm like, hi. So that Right Here Waiting song, it's really streaming up the charts real fast, huh? Probably going to be number one before you know it. And I know he just looked around. He's like, security. such a geek that I, yeah, anyway, he signed it to Chris. Thank you for your great support, your pal. And then Richard Marx 89. And then I'm sure that's when he said, he looked around for security. And asked, and they
could you escort this man out of here, please?
Yes, exactly. I've seen him in concert 8 times, 9 times, or something like that. Now,
oh wow,
love his stuff.
I do like Richard Marx. He's have you heard his latest album? Came out about a year ago, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not terrible.
No. And great producer and everything too.
Yeah. Worst song of the 80s.
Not to be political or anything. I just don't know that I could name a worse song. There are songs that I scratch my head to, and especially, you know, when they went up the charts, you know, in the late 80s, As much as I love, you know, I just said I love George Michael's Careless Whisper, but that Faith album, it got to the sixth, seventh single. And I know they were just trying to get the most number ones, just like they're trying to beat Thriller or trying to beat Bad with Michael Jackson had like five number ones from that. And I don't think anyone ever broke that in the 80s. At this point now, they're releasing things like Monkey. You know, after you listen to it, okay, that's a kind of fun song and everything. But at that point, you're kind of like, anything they release is going to go number one at this point because radio's just playing anything. I mean, if it's George Michael, we're going to play it kind of thing. So right. I started scratching my head on a lot of these things. Like, you know, what can they not, what will not go to number one if they release it off this album?
What about the most overplayed 80s song?
If I answered that honestly right now in 2023, I wouldn't have said this in the 80s. But at this point, I think anytime we think 80s, we all hear Don't Stop Believing by Journey. Don't stop believing. Hold on to that feeling. Street light people. I mean, it's played every day. And you know what? God bless Steve Perry and was it the keyboardist Jonathan Cain.
Yeah.
I think they wrote it maybe. And I'm sure they're making great money off it. They deserve it as much as it's played. As much as it's a fabric of our society, it's so overplayed now.
Yeah.
And then with Glee, when they took, you know, they did it. That I think it's really, really started resurging everything. So congratulations to them, but it's overplayed, but it's not a bad song. Okay. I'm not saying it's a bad song.
Yeah.
In no way am I saying that.
It's a great song, but yeah, I will agree with you. It has probably been played more. Personally, I can still listen to it when it's on, but there's about a couple of others that I have to turn immediately because I've heard them so many times. And I can't. I would say Love Shack.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mickey, Come On Eileen. Those would probably be, three that I could go the rest of my life and not hear again and be okay. Just way overplayed. Okay, since Careless Whisper is your favorite 80s song, we alluded to earlier, we've got an 80s guilty pleasure song. So this is a song you're hanging around with your buds and you say, ooh, I like that song, thinking they may make fun of you, but you don't really care.
All right, here we go. Now, I'm a sucker for duets. All right, I sang a lot of duets. There's no way you're thinking this one. There's no way.
Okay.
All right. If it is, I'll be very surprised.
Okay.
But I'm a sucker for duets. So therefore, whenever there's a solo singer paired up against with another solo singer that they usually don't ever sing together, I typically will like the song. And in the early 80s, Barbra Streisand sang with Barry Gibb.
Oh, guilty.
But not guilty though, because that was not officially, I don't think, is Barry Gibb credit on that? I don't know. Either way, the point is the song I'm thinking of is What Kind of Fool.
What can tears it apart?
Tears it apart.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special report.
So I am editing this podcast and dropping the song clips in post-interview, and it pained me to have to put Barbra Streisand on the podcast. Those of you that know me know about my dislike for all things Barbra. It may be the single most difficult thing I have had to do in the 138 episodes of Living in the 80s. But Chris, it's your song, and I'm glad you like it, but oh my. That is all.
Now, back to our program.
It's a great song. It's not overplayed, and it is definitely guilty pleasure because there's nothing manly about that song. But let's face it, it's one of those songs where back in the 80s, you know, you didn't admit that you liked Air Supply, mm-hmm. or maybe Barry Manilow, you didn't admit it, but you knew that all the girls loved it. So you kind of played along. You kind of, you know, you made fun of it. But when you were with your girlfriend or anything, you're like, hey, you know, yeah, Air Supply's cool. You know, and they appreciate it. And the girls were like, hey, I appreciate being, you know, honest about it kind of stuff. What Kind of Fool? Oh, what a great song.
We will agree to disagree. I've probably got a lot of guilty pleasure songs that you'd go, oh my goodness, that's terrible. Okay, the last question here. This would be the 80s hidden gem. Now, this could be a song. Maybe it charted. Maybe it didn't. Most people, you're pretty sure, haven't heard of this song.
So my guilty pleasure is definitely going to have to be anything by David Foster. And when I say David Foster, I'm talking about the producer who and songwriter who in the 80s wrote countless hits for Chicago. And then any other song that I love, I ended up finding out after the internet came out that was written by David Foster. That was produced by David Foster. That was written or produced by David Foster. And then you listen to it, you go, well, of course, it sounds like David Foster. He has the sound that you just, when you hear it, you go, yeah, that's David Foster. And he had a couple of solo hits, you know, piano-wise, but he also had a couple of songs that he sung on his albums. I really liked his voice.
He was with a group called Airplay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can hear him sing. I'm like, why didn't this guy sing more?
Yeah, exactly.
I've always been a sucker for the St. Elmo's Fire theme. Beautiful.
Exactly.
Love it.
Beautiful.
Love it.
Mm-hmm. There is a, I don't know if you know this, but there is a lyric version of that. That is the instrumental version of the song, but there are actually lyrics to that song. Love theme. I think it's subtitled for just a moment or something like that. But that he was also one of those producers where they didn't necessarily get billing credit either. Kind of like a lot of Sergio Mendes songs. You know, the Never Gonna Let You Go song in the early 80s, that was just credited to Sergio Mendes because he was, or Quincy Jones, a lot of Quincy Jones songs where the singers don't get billed, but it's just to the producer themselves.
All right, Chris, thank you so much for joining me this week. It's been a lot of fun. I know we've kind of chatted back and forth, but it's good kind of meeting you. You know, we're on Zoom, but in person, so to speak. I appreciate the Chart Geeks Facebook page. Not sure everybody would enjoy that kind of thing, but I have a feeling there's probably a good part of our audience that would really enjoy that. So I'm going to drop a link to Chart Geeks in the Living in the 80s Facebook page this week. Chris, thank you again. It has been a total blast. And I am going to close out with a song. It's one of my hidden gems and kind of appropriate today. I think it works. It did not chart.
Oh, no.
But the album of the same name peaked at number 4. So here is Journey with Raised on Radio. And hope you enjoy it. And thank you all for listening. Thank you again, Chris. Take care and God bless. One last thing, we are going to take the next couple weeks off as I have fantasy football drafts and vacation coming up and really will not be able to dedicate the time to producing any podcasts. So we will be back in a few weeks with some new and exciting episodes. We'll get the gang back together and have a great time. Until then, we'll see you soon.
Are you through?
No, I'm doing society a favor.
So?
That's another one right now. I've got you for the rest of your natural born life if you don't watch your step. You want another one?
Yes.
You got it. You got another one right there. That's another one, pal.
Cut it out.
You through?
Not
even close, bud.